need to be connected with the earth which gave us birth. We work together. There is no limit to what we can accomplish.
Hello, and welcome to Down to Earth with Dylan and Friends. This is your host, Dylan, and today we have a very special guest, River Redfern. I met River during my travels in Nepal, and we ended up becoming really good friends. We're now in the land of New Zealand, and I'm staying in his caravan at this eco-community that he has a share in, and the land is beautiful. We're surrounded by, we're in his cabin, but you might be able to hear the cicadas outside. It's a beautiful day, and yeah, it's finally come to the point where we finally decided to do the podcast.
Kia ora, thanks for having me, Dylan.
How are you doing today, my beautiful brother?
I'm doing very well today. Started the day with morning yoga by the ocean, saluting the sun. Working with the Kambo medicine, my 25th day of a cleanse, one dot a day, keeps the doctor away. It's been a pleasure having you on the land, man. Funny how the network connected us in Nepal and that World Rainbow Gathering brought you here to New Zealand, Aotearoa. It's been an honor sharing the space with you and working beside you and it's been a really nice brotherhood, and appreciate you having a chat with me on the podcast. It's a pleasure to contribute and share the voice, so yeah, man.
Yeah, no, I can't thank you enough for doing this, and you came to the trailer this morning like, it's time, Dill, let's do the podcast. I was like, all right, okay, let me get ready.
Wake up from the dream world. The day, today is the day.
Mm. You mentioned you did some Kambo this morning.
Yeah, so many years ago in the Amazon, I came across the Kambo frog, and I did 10 days working with a shaman, learning about its possibilities of clearing the human body. And I had a close friend who was able to, she did a little amount of medicine every day for 2 months and able to get rid of her Lyme's disease. And that really inspired me, because I hadn't heard of any cases of people being able to rid themselves of the Lyme's disease. So she was a lovely English sister, and she was very inspiring and inspired me to progress with and learn more about the frog and dive in deep into cleaning the body. And I was able to get rid of my Crohn's disease completely with like full remission, and my inflammation, and also these days I more use it for boosting the immune system, because I think that's one of the most important things, because we can't really help any other people if we're depleted and we're not in our best physical shape and sharp mind. So Kambo is really good for helping me through that process of sharpening the mind, cleaning the body regularly, because it's not something you just do once. I do take many months off a year from doing it, because it can overload the nervous system. So finding balance in that too.
Yeah, you know, for those of you who don't know what Kambo is, I thought it was like the toad to begin with when I first heard, because there's the DMT toad that people will do, but actually Kambo, it's just a huge detoxifier. You don't really get high from it, actually. You do this purge if you do a large amount, and it takes out all the toxins in your body, and it's something that can be very beneficial to everyday people. The power of, well, it's not quite plant medicine,
it's amphibian medicine.
Yeah,
it's fascinating. Like, because I was like, you know, I was a pretty strong vegan at the time going into the Amazon, and when I heard about the frog, I was like, oh, well, no, I have to see this process through. So I went with the shaman out into the forest, and and we did these crazy frog calls, which sounds kind of like wah, wah. And then you hear them call, like a call and response back, and and they were on these specific types of trees, and you'd flick them up, kind of just nudge them off, and then they'll go flying, and they're like, you know, super agile, and they like land on the ground, and we'd collect them and we'd be really kind to them. We would take them back, and we would extract the medicine by like basically tickling their nose, and then they like kind of secrete it out of their skin as like a defense mechanism. And you gently just take part of the secretions, leaving them with their back legs to be able to defend themselves, and then you kind of give them a little bath, and then you set them free. And I was like, how about if the frogs become extinct, you know, what's going to happen? Like, and they have so much trust in the Amazon, and the Amazon is their mother, and it always provides. So they're like, oh, another frog will come to us, or, you know, some other medicine will come to us. And it's a very fascinating story. The shaman, his name was Kampo, he had a very sick tribe, and there's lots of parasites in the Amazon. You can imagine the jaguar shits, you know, there's, you know, parasites in these shits, as well as all through the Amazon, because it's a very intense environment. And he had ayahuasca, and Mother Ayahuasca told him that to heal his tribe and help his tribe boost their immune system and get over this sickness that was wiping them out, that ayahuasca showed him the frog, and showed him how to extract it through his visions, and he was able to really help his tribe and heal this tribe, and I think it's been going on for thousands of years in certain parts of the Amazon. It's quite beautiful, and it says that the frog's rage is what, you know, you humans can't fight your own battles, so here, have some of my rage, and it will burn away what doesn't serve you. And that was the story that I was told when I went there.
Wow.
Yeah.
No, I've heard this before too, and from you, and I think from others, the story of Kampo. Yeah, as you know, my first time doing Kampo was with you. But I had the opportunity while I was in Nepal, and the first time we were supposed to do it, I guess everyone, it was just a lot of stuff happened, so we never ended up doing it. But we went to Bardia, this national park, and we were supposed to go on a safari to see like tigers and elephants and stuff. And the day that it finally came where we were supposed to do Kampo, I had been like kind of sick. I've had diarrhea for 2 or 3 weeks prior to that, and when the day finally came, I was so energy depleted that I said no. I was like, I can barely even move around right now. But honestly, it probably would have been the perfect time to do it, but I wasn't experienced enough.
It sounds like you're purging already, like from the sickness in Nepal.
Yeah,
you know, like
diarrhea for like 2-3 weeks straight.
That's cleaning, you know. It's quite the most brutal way of cleaning, but
yeah,
it's kind of like the medicine was working without you taking just the intention.
So yeah, I couldn't do it, or decided not to do it, and but I always knew there'd be another time that would come up where it would finally happen.
It was really nice. We did the ceremony up on the yoga platform looking over the ocean, and it was a sweat. It was hot, you know, in the sun, doing it in direct sun, it's brutal. It's like double heat, because it does activate a lot of heat in the body. But yeah, it's something we need to do another, like usually do about 3 in a moon cycle, so it's nearly time for another cleanse here for you.
Yeah, well, something I look forward to. I really have a close relationship with these kind of medicines, because anything that's going to help you heal, anything that's going to help you grow, I am totally for it.
Yeah, and remove the obstacles.
I think the Western society has mixed feelings on medicine, plant medicines and stuff, and they're more lenient towards the pharmaceutical, but it's, you know, it's time and again, it's proven to be more potent than any pharmaceutical. Something that's will actually help you and cure you, not something you have to necessarily take the rest of your life every day, where my grandparents, I see them, and they take 5-10 pills a day, and They only seem to be getting more sick, you know, which is kind of sad. But, you know, I can't convince them to be like, here, you know, try this medicine. Even though my dad, his eyesight, he has, like, he could see and everything, but it's his eyesight's not as sharp as it could be. And I was telling him about Sananga, and what Sananga is this stuff you would put into your eye. I don't know exactly what it's made from, but it's
A mixture of different plants.
From like Central America, South America. And you put it in your eye and it burns quite a bit, but it actually dissolves the cataracts in your eyes. It sharpens your vision. They claim it's supposed to decalcify your pineal gland
for your eye.
And there's a lot of other benefits too to it. But you know, him and a lot of other people, they hate to put things in their eyes, and
Especially if it burns. There's an aversion to pain, but sometimes when we go into it, we drop the fear and we let go that it's it does serve us, you know. I think we dance around this earth trying to avoid unpleasant feelings and only try to strive for pleasant feelings, but in reality that's not what life is all about. It's like favoring just one side of the coin, so to speak. But if you take the root of all medicines, it goes back to the Amazon. Like, I think 70% of medicines around that all originate from the Amazon and the incredible botanical garden of plants. And, you know, if you explain that to your dad, you'd be like, oh, we're just going to the source, you know, grandpapa. Just going to the source, you know. That's all we're doing is we're skipping the synthesizer, we're skipping Big Pharma, and we're trying to find the medicine directly from the plants, because most plants are beneficial and healthy and healing when they're in their raw form, and then you turn coca leaf into cocaine and it's suddenly really bad for your system. So we're trying to refine everything from sugar to rice to flour, and the more refined it is, the more damaging it is on us. So closer to the source.
You know, it's, you were saying, like, we're always leading towards, like, feeling good feelings, but the greatest change comes from the uneasy feelings. Like, for example, exercise. You know, you go for a jog, it's like, oh man, it's hard, or you're burning, working out or whatever, and it's like, it's a burn, it's hard, but you get the greatest outcome. When you're only chasing that good feeling, you end up feeling horrible anyway. Like, through emotionally, you'll start feeling sad, depressed, because maybe you're not exercising, maybe you're not going eating clean and raw, you're just eating quick fast food, you know, for quick good feeling.
And it doesn't last. The Big Mac doesn't last, you know. Like, it's something that will pass, just like the bad feelings. It will pass, and that's where the dissatisfaction comes in, because it's not ever enduring pleasure. It's not tangible pleasure that it's like ever enduring, you know. It just comes and goes, and then you're sad when it's gone, and the Big Mac's finished. Oh god, you know, like, and then you feel sick because of what you've ingested, whatever it may be, you know.
And I find, like, it's harder to feel good after when you go so deep down, because now that you're really out of shape and unhealthy, it's hard to start getting healthy. Yeah. You know, now you got to start exercising, and it's so much harder because you have, say, all this built up emotion, this built up fat, and once you get into the routine of doing it, it starts getting easier, and, you know, you start progressing and going to new heights. Where
and then you can slip up and you return the cycle, and you have to start again. You start noticing that cycle, it's quite powerful, because you're like, I can see a pattern here in my life. If I can see it, I can change it. You know, and you can ride the waves instead of, like, you know, becoming at the mercy of your desires, because you can catch them and go, wait, you know, like, this will pass, you know, because a desire, or it just lasts a short period of time. But if you act on it, you know, we all act on it in different ways, you know. And some desires are worse than others, you know. Taxing on the body.
When you go through the path too of exercise or becoming healthier, you see that new height, you see that you're more sharp, your memory is more enhanced, everything. And you know, you have that, even say if you slip up and you start just eating fast food, being unhealthy, you have the memory, like, man, I could build my mind, I could build my body body to new heights where that I was before, and the memory remains. And you know, there's no limit to how strong you can be. The more you do the exercise, or the more practices. Healthy you eat, you become higher and stronger. And you know, there's no limitation. And you know, we always think about like destroying the mind a lot in society of like, but we don't think about like building it, like coming to new heights of a focus of memory. And
When you set these kind of like new plateaus, I feel like you said, you remember it. It's like a knowing. You know that what you're capable of, feeling much healthier and vibrant and more positive. And when you talked about the body just now, it's sort of that Plato, is a Plato quote. I don't know if I'll get it. It's like every human's responsibility is see their body be at the best of its ability in this life, like taking it to its most highest vibration or highest frequency. Or it's like kind of like a responsibility of being born in this human body, which is a rare opportunity. And it's kind of our responsibility to take our mind and our body as far as we can. Or it's a real disservice to the gift of life, you know, so to speak.
And
I think I minced the words, but that's kind of it.
I think that's the best thing you can do for humanity, for the earth, for the planet, is just to work on yourself, because that does affect everyone around you, your brothers, your sisters, your mom, your dad, the earth itself.
Yeah.
The more stronger and healthier you become, it inspires others to do the same. And they feel that energy, you know, when you're around, that big smile and that positive outlook on life, they feel that. And it's inspiring.
It's
and,
bloody contagious, mate.
And, you know, to me, that's my belief, is that's the greatest thing you can do for this world is to work on yourself.
And then you can help change the world. You got to start here, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to change the world. There's not too many that want to change themselves. Eh?
Yeah. Peace starts within. Eh?
Even on your ideas of what is right, morally right or righteous, they actually start to change when you change as a person, when you become healthier. It's like, oh, maybe I was wrong about this ideology or this idea. Or,
you become a bit of a flag post on their path. You know, aspire to inspire and lift each other up. Because if we're all burying ourselves, numbing each other, and all, you know, glued to our phone for every second of the day, then everyone else is just going to go, I want to look busy too, so I'm going to look at my phone as well. And then it's just the rabbit hole of unconscious scrolling, which can take up your whole lifetime. It will just pass you by.
For the new generation,
that's the challenge,
like,
isn't it?
Yeah, feel for the new generation, it's probably going to be over half of their waking state on a screen playing games on their phone, and instead of actually like just looking at nature, being a part of nature, seeing all this life around and just being stuck in this digital realm.
Yeah, and I get it. I grew up with video games, and it's very stimulating, and then when you look to nature, it can be quite dull, because in comparison to that intense stimuli, dopamine release, then you can get bored very easily. But it doesn't take a long period of time to readjust to nature's frequency. I know everyone who I've heard, you know, a lot of people go into nature if they've got depression and anxiety, and they like start to really to calm their breath down and to slow down their mind and to notice the little changes, the insects working away, the bees collecting the pollen, and they start to go, oh wow, this is, you know, it takes time, but you start to see that this is actually amazing dream that we're living in, you know?
Yeah.
And that we're living within two dream worlds. When we go to sleep, we dream, and then when we wake up, we're dreaming. But it's just a dream that we all can kind of like an agreed hallucination, the waking world.
Yeah.
People kind of get it more than the dream world. Yeah.
There's a few months ago, during the holidays, I'm staying in your trailer.
Caravan,
and there's this big fly flying around, and suddenly it stops, and I notice it landed in a spider's web. I'm like,
oh shit.
And right away this big spider comes out from the den, goes, grabs it. I'm like, holy shit, watching it all happen. And then some other spider came, they made eye contact. Like, they were, it seemed like they were about to fight over this fly, and then the smaller one that came out of nowhere kind of ran back and was like, okay, you have him.
Retreat.
But, like, that was, like, 5-10 minutes, but it was quite entertaining. I was like, whoa, damn, nature.
Nature is brutal, eh? Volatile, yeah. And nature, it's crazy. Yeah.
And I made friends with one of the birds here. What do you call those birds?
Tui?
No.
The weka.
The weka.
The land bird that somehow survived to this day.
It comes and visits me once in a while. When I was making food the other day, and came up pretty close. I was like, oh, I guess I could give you a little bit of food. Like, yeah. I was just cooking, give him a piece, and he's like, ate it, and he's like, oh, yeah. Now we're friends, you know?
Yeah, I call him George. Yeah.
George.
He's a scavenger, man. Yeah, they're amazing. They're kind of like the kiwi bird, but way more cunning. Like, the kiwi bird's so vulnerable. Kind of like the little dodo. Like, it must be related to the dodo, that ancient prehistoric bird.
Hmm.
But the kiwi bird's numbers are, like, totally, like, dwindling, and, you know, they have a lot of sanctuaries on the islands where there's no predators. But the weka is so fast and so cunning. Like, if you just kind of, like, flinch in its direction, it's just, like, straight through the forest. Mm. And he'll be back again to try and get your bread or, you know, your muesli bar. He steals muesli bars from hikers regularly, you know, running off into the forest, de-wrapping it, eating it. Mm. They've got these red eyes that are quite, you know, demonic. I don't know. Had a bit of experience with the weka.
they don't have wings, do they?
No, they have wings. They have wings.
Yeah.
There was a situation when I was really hungry. I was living out in the bush for like 10 days at a time, and we ran out of lentils. It's me and my ex-French partner, and we needed to eat some protein, and we're quite far walk from town, so we had to. I actually had made a boomerang, and you know, and I threw it, and I didn't really think it was gonna like clock him, but it just took the weka out, and I was like, oh, okay, it's on, we're eating tonight. It was like full survival mode. I've never caught a wild bird in the wild before, but I heard the native Māori people here would eat the weka quite regularly, and yeah, I tuned into that primitive part, and, you know, my vegan archetype was a thing of the past at this point. And I we ate weka that night. We got naked. I know that's crazy, but we got naked to take the feathers off and to take the guts out. And then we burnt all the excess hair off the fur feather off the bird. And we gave thanks for providing, and we ate it that night, and it was kind of like quite dark meat. It was like, it was a lot like chicken, but I would never do it again unless it was really, if I couldn't find any other kind of food, because we were eating a lot of mussels, but our mussel reserves were really dwindling as well, so but the things you do to survive and trying to live off the land, sometimes I think the early people here really did rely off a lot of the bird life, because New Zealand is not super abundant in food. They grew a lot of kumara, sweet potato.
Mm.
Ate a lot of bird. There was a giant bird, the moa bird, and that was kind of like a giant ostrich, but they all varied in size. But they ate this bird to pretty much extinction, and then the giant 4-meter wingspan hawk died out, which was a bit of a shame, a ripple effect of of the early native peoples here. But yeah, just a bit of a ramble back into history there about bird life.
It sounds like you've traveled quite a bit in your life. Like, yeah, when I met you, it was in Nepal, but you guys are coming from India. And
yeah.
You guys were there for a while, eh?
Yeah, we spent 10 months in India last year. We rented our little cabin out and set sail over there and did a bit of time in some ashram, and went to a rainbow gathering, and lived in Gokana by a coconut plantation for a while. In Sri Lanka, we were in an organic fruit farm, helping the startup of that little hostel kind of fruit farm. So yeah, been around a bit. Last year was a lot of travel. Coming back here to the land has been very, very nice. Feel very lucky. But I also feel like my time here is coming to an end too. I feel the nomadic feet, wanting to move on. And I'm from Australia originally, so I would love to return to Australia. Been in New Zealand a decade now, reconnecting to roots, and I think it's about time to go back across the Tasman and not have too many plans and just trust and see where it goes. Yeah, I find it hard to settle in one spot.
I'm the same way, man. I've been nomadic for so many years, and the idea of being in one spot for more than 10 years isn't all that tempting, but I think it would be wise of me to invest in some property and have that as like a base where, you know, I start community, I start growing, start building structures and stuff, and then like whenever I get tired of traveling, go back to that place and continue to develop it.
Have a base. Well, I'm selling if you're interested, man.
Well, since I don't have citizenship here in New Zealand,
true.
I probably wouldn't.
Mm.
And it's just the price of land here is enormous.
Yeah. It's quite, yeah, it is quite expensive here in New Zealand. Well, the situation where I am, it's kind of like shared land, you know? You kind of buy a share and you kind of, you know, if you feel like your time is come and you want to release being caretaker, you can release it and let new energy flow in and carry on working on the land. I don't feel like when you're renting land, like it's kind of like renting land, leased land.
Yeah.
You don't feel as attached to the land, depending how much you contribute. You know, you built like a giant house and many things, but we live quite simply. We live quite rainbow. You know, the more things you have, the actually more stress I feel like you have to worry about more things breaking and maintaining them. So having just really good tools that work really well, it's really important. But not like thousands of tools, you know. I've seen a lot of the elders and they accumulate a lot and it's just more to protect, really. I don't know if it adds benefit to the life, so to speak. If you look at the older people around you, they're born at a time where accumulation is security, you know. And we're born in a different time, aren't we? So we see things quite differently. And but I do see the value in putting the crop down, contributing to growing your own food, and not having to rely on the fast food or the supermarket chains and being self-reliant, building towards that. But you need community. You need everyone working together. It really lightens the load. If you try and do it all by yourself, you burn out, you know. It's only a matter of a few years, you know.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah.
And you guys are leasing it from the Maori, right?
Yeah,
the
so
indigenous of the land.
The indigenous. It's native land. And they own a lot of land in the area, a lot of fruit orchards. This is probably the only community that's that they have on there. But, yeah, that's also not a sure thing, is it? You know, because the lease is a bit, it can be more fragile than being your own landowner, because, you know, you're, you just pay your rates depending what area you're in, and depending if you're off grid like us, you would have very low rates. But I also see like if you're living in a community with the elders, they have to be able to release and let go and let the young people take the reins to be able to create and make mistakes and to turn to them for their wisdom, but really like releasing and letting the young people really channel their energy through. Otherwise the energy can get a bit stagnant. It's kind of like the tree in the forest, you know, when it grows up and then that tree must fall so that the new growth can come up and get the sunlight, you know, the new little trees. And I find that it's a bit of a stopper for communities. Not a stopper, but like it limits its full potential. Because me and my partner Janelle, we like see so much potential for such beautiful land with such good foundations, like 50-year-old community. You know, it's got amazing abundance of fruit trees and the river running through streams, and you know, a network of roads and dwellings and workshop spaces, potential workshop spaces. to share people's gifts and to help people, you know.
Yeah.
But if it becomes more of a like a just a moneymaker, like rental space, retirement village, it can a bit slow that energy flow.
Yeah.
So I think that's part of the reason why we're moving on to the next chapter, because Rainbow really cultivates that free flowing energy. And you know how it's only 1 month? You know, I think that's for a reason, because the energy might get stagnant if it stays longer, unless it's got allowing fresh energy to flow through.
Yeah.
You know, if that's why I think campgrounds have a flow of energy going through them. So it's actually important to have people staying only for short times, you know?
Yeah, I hear you. Mm. And also people staying longer to hold ground, hold space.
Hold ground,
and,
take
care of the area.
Yeah.
You mentioned Rainbow. For those of you who do not know what the Rainbow is, Rainbow Gatherings, when I first brought it up with my dad, he's like, is that LGBT, like gay or something?
Yeah.
I was like, no, Dad, Rainbow came way before that.
Yeah, that was like 1969, I think.
Yeah, it was like after, during the Vietnam War, was it? And
yeah,
it was like a prayer for peace, basically, where all the hippies kind of gathered together and
retreat to the forest.
Yeah, what was it, like a month or so later, the war ended. And so they're basically like, it's basically a prayer for peace, but it's also like it's a hippie gathering. People who are down to earth all come together.
People from all parts of life.
Yeah.
And they can turn up, and it's a sharing. It's a sharing space, you know. And there's like quite strict guidelines, you know, like, so we don't have technology in there, so we're all present, and we sing like traditional songs around the fire from all different parts of the world. It's not just English songs, there's Spanish songs, there's African songs, there's Baja, like Indian songs, there's and the tribe has expanded since that point, you know, to Europe, and it's growing because they change the world gatherings every year
to a new location
to try and grow the Rainbow tribe, which is just basically everyone, all the colors of the rainbow are welcome. It's a conscious gathering, isn't it?
Yeah, where like it started in the States, but then they moved to Australia to do their first world rainbow gathering, but now they're just doing a new country each year, and then after those countries have their own like just
family
gatherings. So I met River at the gathering in Nepal, the world gathering, and now they're just finishing up like a local gathering.
Yeah.
Now they're doing their own annual gathering, which is really cool. But at that gathering, there's people from, I think, over 50 different countries. There's so many languages. And honestly, like, it was just a lot of like kind of like yogis, gurus, medicine people, shamans, and there's a lot of amazing workshops, and it was just such amazing energy to have so much wisdom and knowledge and just peace in one area.
Yeah.
And it was quite potent and powerful. And that was the sole reason why I went to Nepal.
It's like a gathering of students and teachers, you know, of the Earth tribe, you know, because that's pretty much the center point, is giving back to the land. We always leave the land better than we find it. I mean, the Department of Conservation here love us because we clear up all the rubbish and we take it out, and we you know, we do, the people are doing water prayers, earth prayers, and prayers for humankind, you know. It's a very peaceful place to be, isn't it? It's a month, you know. They usually do it moon cycle. It's a moon cycle, new moon to new moon. So we just seeded one recently near here in the top of the South Island of New Zealand. And I don't know how many people are in there at the moment. We've popped out to run a food truck. But we'll pop back in on Sunday and see how it's going, you know. I think, you know, people will still be gathering around the fire and singing and cooking together.
Yeah.
And enjoying life.
I used that time at this recent gathering in New Zealand to work on some ancestral skills. And for the first time in my life, I started a fire with a bow drill. So with no lighter, no match, I used like a rope, a stick, another stick, like a straight stick. A rock to hold
some moss,
a bit of dry moss, dry grass, and I started a fire by hand, pretty much. That was the first time I've ever done in my life. I've seen it done on survival shows and stuff, but
It's smoking! It's smoking! I remember you yelling that in the kitchen that morning. And then I think you did it in like 15 minutes the next morning. Like,
yeah.
So fast. Once you like muscle memoried it.
Yeah.
It was like, okay, no lineup.
It like took me...
It's like a soaring motion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It took me the one, like pretty much the full day to get the materials together, to get the technique, to get the feel for it, and then... Eventually, I stopped. I started getting a bit of a headache, and I was like, okay, I'll try again tomorrow. And first thing in the morning, 15, 20 minutes, got it right away, fire. Wow. And I was like, yes. And then for 2 days after that, 3 days in a row, I continued and got a fire going every morning. And
you're like, I got an ember. It was so beautiful to see you in your element there. And, you know, mastering the fire. And the water's there, eh? So it's on this water that comes out of the Kaiarangi National Park. Is called a resurgence, so the water is pouring out of the earth and it stays in shadow pretty much the whole way down to us, so it's ice cold, man. So cold. And me and Dylan were doing the cold water immersions, and your whole body is just tingly and activated, and you know, you feel like doing like a fucking warrior dance because it's like you know, cuts right through to your core, and you know, you got to really steady your breath. Naturally, you got to steady your breath if you want to be under there for any length of time. But then the outside world's so warm once you arise, you know, which is quite nice contrast, huh?
Yeah. I was just thinking, because I was scaling the side of the rock, and then I fell. The guy said, like, it looked very slow motion when I was falling.
Yeah, you fell backwards down the river on the wet, mossy, wet side, and it was just like, do, 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 and you took down some sticks and branches on your way down, and your hat, your sombrero started to float off, and you're like, my hat! But you were pretty onto it, and you were unscathed, you know? I don't think you had a scratch.
It was like... All my spirit guides were like, not again!
Let's catch him. We've got this, you know, like, dematerialize the rocks below.
It was kind of neat the way you guys said, like, yo, it looked like it just went all slow motion. I was...
Yeah.
And it reminded me of this time where it was, like, just after doing my ayahuasca San Pedro ceremony in Tasmania,
yeah.
I was helping the shaman cut some firewood. And, like, when I work, I like to... doing quite fast, and I think of it as a challenge, and I was working pretty hard, and the shaman was like, I don't know what you did, Dil, or what happened, but I looked around, like, you were just going, like, fucking crazy fast, faster than I've ever seen anyone go, and I looked around, and everything was still, there was nothing moving, it's like time slowed down or stopped, and you were just in your element, and I was like, whoa, okay, you know, something I didn't really notice or pick up on, but...
You're in the flow state.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that, the full power flow state. I've noticed that when you play your guitar, too, it's like you could play forever, you know? It's just like your arms are kind of like morphing, like, you know, like it's kind of like the stream, like... you know? I don't know, it's kind of like a blur, but your mouth and your song really holds it, you know? I love your music, Dylan.
Well, thanks, man. Speaking of which, I will be coming out with another album, I think, in the next month or two. And I'm not sure what I'm going to call the album, but maybe Pachamama.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Tribute to the Earth, eh?
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Or the last album was Sacred Lands, and yeah, it was basically another tribute to the Earth, but yeah, I had my hair, my beard turn into trees, and...
I've got to see this picture, man.
Oh, I still haven't showed you, eh? Oh, I'm going to, yeah. Oh, I have the image. I'll show you after this.
What day is it? Saturday. Maybe, are you going to have some busking happening?
Maybe. Because
you found that really good spot at the Starboard Ave in Tasman.
Not like I need to, but it would be fun to, just an excuse to work more on my music, to be sitting there for 2-3 hours and...
constant on it.
You know, when I was in New Zealand, I didn't have a working holiday visa at this time. And I was almost pretty broke, and I was like, you know, and my friends were telling me, you should bust, Dil, like, you would make a killing, and I was like, yeah, I guess so, you know, and for me, I don't think of it as, like, bumming or anything like that, because I don't even have a sign. When I do it, I just play music, and I have a bowl or whatever, guitar case. If people want to throw money in, they can. If they don't, that's cool. I'm just playing some music for the world, and any tips are appreciated, but honestly, I was making enough where, like, I had this Honda Odyssey that I turned into a home on wheels, and I was able to fill up the gas tank full, and my food reservoirs were full, too, and I had a lot of extra money and change, so I actually had abundance. You know, when I surrendered to the universe, I ended up having more, like, an abundance of money, an abundance of food, and an abundance of health. I was just really strong and healthy, and I noticed the happiest points in my life is when I surrender to the universe, when I just go with the flow of everything instead of, like, forcing it, like, I gotta make money, I gotta pay the bills, I gotta, you know, when I get stuck in that routine, it's not really fulfilling. But when I'm just letting the universe kind of take care of me, life becomes very magical, like, very, very magical. Like, I just get surrounded by, like, people of the earth, medicine people, and these crazy, like, adventures start to occur, and these are normally the happiest moments of my life. Not when I have 10 or 20 grand saved. It's like when I'm just free, when I'm being a nomad, when I'm free and just exploring.
I just realized that, you know, when you have just a little bit coming in, you know, drip-feeded from the universe, you're real grateful for what you have, you know. You're like, oh my god, my food reservoirs are full, I got some fuel, I'm free, you know. And that gratitude is what creates contentment, because I feel like that is, I've just learned this in a lot of Buddhist teachings, and it's just that this is the key to contentment. And we live in an age where everyone's discontent, but we have so much stuff and so much things and so much money and so much da 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 da, but the contentment, gratitude, is you have it already. You have everything you need. You have more than what you need, and that will create contentment. You know, and that's when we're not disempowered. You know, we're empowered when we're grateful. We're empowered. It's actually such a really wonderful to practice, and it's so humbling when you do it all by busking. So it's all by your own music, channeling your music.
Yeah.
You know, which also fills you up with joy, you know. Yeah. I see you, I'm smiling, you know, that beautiful song, you know. The joy that you're sharing with others is coming back in gratitude, and then creating contentment in your life. And that's when you're at your highest, you know.
I hear you, and I totally agree. Like, when you're grateful, because say you're born rich, you have everything you could have ever wanted, like, your parents are filthy rich, you get everything you want, but you lose gratitude because, you know, you could just have everything. Where you look at somebody who's on the street, you know, hungry, and they just get, like, a couple grains of rice, or they just get some food finally, or some water, and they're like, yes, thank you, and they're so happy for so, with so little.
Yeah.
You know, and less is more. That's what I find the magic of gratitude, of being grateful, is, yeah, when you're getting what you need, and not too much of it, just, like, a balance of it. Because, yeah, that's, I've noticed that I'm more happier with less, because I'm so much more grateful for the air I breathe, the food I consume, the water I drink, the friends around me. But if I come to the point where I have that all the time, 24/7, that it loses its magic. I'm not as grateful anymore. I'm like, oh, well, this is just an everyday norm. But,
and it takes great trust in living that lifestyle. You know?
It does.
I feel like that is part of the practice, because you got to trust, and that the universe usually deals out exactly what you need. Not more, just what you need.
Yeah.
Live another day. And it's also, on the other flip side, it will only dish out what you can handle. You know, it won't give you something you can't handle. It might make you cry, break down, but it's only giving you the lessons that you can handle, you know. And I've had some breakdown moments, and I'm like, I can't handle any more. You know, I can't take any more emotional arrows. I'm done, you know. And then that's my fill, you know. And then you walk away and you process it. And it's the flip side, you know. There's two flip sides. And give you what you need and what you can handle. So the lessons are all there. I feel like it just, like, sometimes I feel like it's pre-organized, you know.
So, yeah.
You know.
And, you know, that spooky. That trust is definitely something you need, because it's hard to go in the great wide open with almost nothing, you know. It's going to be scary.
Well, it's insecurity. You feel insecure, right? But isn't true security being secure in the insecure? Because security can be taken away from you, and suddenly you're insecure.
Yeah.
So isn't true security being humble, sitting with nothing and being feel full secure in the what perceived as insecure? Well, that's power.
Right, yeah, there, I think right, you're more safe and ready because you're already used to it. Mm. You're already in it, or so like nothing could really be taken away where you'd feel so insecure because you've already had almost nothing. Where if you always had everything, you were always rich, and then suddenly it was all taken away.
Oh my god. Oh,
that would hit you so much more harder. Yeah. And you wouldn't know how to react. You're like, I've never lived like this before. What do I do? Yeah.
Start eating witchery grubs and bugs.
Yeah.
Be like, what do I do?
You know, man, when I first left the country for the first time, I went to Australia, and not even $1,000. I think it was like 400 or 500 Canadian. It wasn't that much money, man, I had, and I was just going on a whim, like, I had this cherry picking job lined up, and they had the accommodation sorted, so I was like, all right, well, if I just like make it out until first paycheck, I will be good.
Yeah.
And I think they take about like $200. It was $150 or $200 every week. They take off your, or they, you have to pay them to stay there. And we were at like a resort, like the ski resort. We had the whole lodge for all the pickers because it wasn't, it was summer, so it wasn't ski season.
Mm.
And it was like a couple weeks in, I still never got paid, and I was supposed to pay for rent. And I was like, I told him, I was like, well, as soon as you pay me, I can pay you for the rent, you know?
It goes round and round.
Yeah. So we were like, what's going on? So me and the contractor went to the bank, and we're like, what's going on? Like, he says he's paid me, and I still haven't received the money. And she's like, oh, I meant to make an O, but I made a 6 because she, you know, the circle, she accidentally went too far, and it looked like a 6, so...
So she didn't get your account number.
She put the number in wrong, and it went into a blank. So an account that didn't exist. So it was just supposed to bounce back.
Mm.
So good thing that didn't just end up in somebody's bank account, you know. Yeah. And then they'd have to be a request like, "Hey, sorry, we actually put this money in your account."
Bank error in your favor.
But so I finally got paid, and dude, I only had like 5 or 10 potatoes left and an onion or two. Like, I didn't have much food. I was surviving on cherries.
Well, onions and potatoes, you can make like a hash brown.
Yeah. Well, I normally cut the potatoes into blocks, fry them up, and then I add onions, garlic to it. And that's pretty tasty. But yeah, man, I didn't have much, and those cherries was the main thing filling me up. But it all worked out, and... But yeah, I was just going on a whim.
Yeah.
The thing is, I was in Canada before that, and I was living a very routine life, and I was like, this is getting really bored and depressing. I'm living in the same place, doing the same thing that I've been doing for years, and like, what am I doing with my life? Where am I going to go? What am I going to do? I'm like, I don't want to live like this anymore. I'm like, you know, universe, give me a sign. Like, what should I do? And all of a sudden, I noticed on my Facebook feed, my friend posted that he was going to Australia to plant trees, and I was like, I should do that, you know, because I would think I was like 6 or 7 years. No, I think it was 5 years deep in the tree planting.
Mm.
And I always wanted to travel plant abroad, but I never saw an opportunity. So that post inspired me.
Wow.
But when I applied at the time, they're like, it's not quite season yet for this contract, for this company. But if you come back to us in like end of January, February, we'll have a spot for you. So
aligned for you.
So I did cherries, apples, and then went over and started tree planting.
Man on the move.
And that's when I started making an abundance of cash. I had my first $1,000 day planting trees with Timberwolf. Wow,
that's massive.
That's the most I ever, well, I made more now. Like my best day is 1280 in a single day. Oh, wow.
1280 trees.
Dollars.
$1,280. How many trees is that?
That was $3,300 at the price of 37 cents a tree.
Wow.
And that was in New Zealand.
You must be moving so fast to do that, man.
Well, you get into the flow-like state, a flow state, where you're not thinking about anything else. Your main focus, your main energy is on planting that next tree. So you're not like engaged in the conversation. You're not engaged in the past. You're engaged in that. And, you know, where you direct your focus is where you're directing your energy.
Mm.
So if your focus is directed directly to what you're doing in that moment. Say, so I was planting trees, you get into that that flow state, and all your energy is being fed into that instead of like a conversation. It's all directed into one point. And
That's what yoga is meant to do.
Man, that's
to
when I
channel the energy in one spot, one place.
I find that's when I get potent, not supernatural, but almost really potent, powerful energy. Yeah. Where like all my energy is directed, and like that flow like state is powerful. And there's more different forms of it. There can be the form of working where like you get into the flow like state and you start getting to new heights, or even in music, you get into that flow like state.
I experienced the flow state first in motocross when I was a young man, and you know, my body was so sore up into a certain point going around the track so many times.
Yeah.
And it was like I couldn't feel the muscle pain anymore, and the bike was just moving itself through, like, you know, the moguls and around the thing, and it was like automatic nearly. And it was like, it was such a bizarre feeling going from like complete fatigue to like the motorcycle is riding itself, and I'm so accurate in the corners and shit. I was like mind blown when I first. Now I like it in music, you know, because I feel like you don't get tired. You can play you can really follow the melodies and the harmony, and you can just channel it. You can kind of guide it, you know.
It becomes very magical.
Feels like there's like an abundance of energy that's like never ending. It's like it's not coming from you nearly. It's like coming through you. It's so bizarre. It's such an wonderful experience to have.
Yeah.
And to work on regularly, you know, to like, okay, I'm going to try and drop into flow state, and you have undivided attention, one point of focus, and you sit down. It could be planting trees. It could be playing a song. It could be knitting. It could be, you know, it could be anything.
Even,
you know?
Speaking. I find like a flow-like state when like you're speaking from the heart and you're speaking about something you're really passionate about. And I've noticed even in myself, sometimes when I'm in that state, when I'm speaking of things I've never read or heard before. Almost like I'm pulling it out of the quantum field or out of the earth.
Yeah, the unified field, yeah.
Yeah, ancient words, ancient wisdom. Maybe that hasn't been spoken in thousands of years, but it was always a part of this earth, always a part of the quantum.
You just tapped into the reservoir.
Tapping in, and some people would call it channeling, but I also call it like the flow-like state when, you know, you're pulling stuff out of thin air.
It's like you mentioned heart flow, right? And heart and earth have the same letters. So there is like this abundant information that is stored all around us. And if you can tune into that, channel it, it's like it does feel like it's coming from somewhere else. But it's not. It's coming. You are the earth. You are nature. And you're just embodying that and reconnecting to your true essence, you know? Like, and then it's like activated, you know? And it comes through.
I got to.
Effortlessly.
Yeah, there's this mycologist friend I have in Tasmania. And he's like, I prefer the old school Wi-Fi. The old school Wi-Fi.
What's that?
I was like, you're my kind of friend, and I think of the old school Wi-Fi as like the old way of a shamanistic way of things, where like, you know, there's astral projection, astral traveling, but like even pulling stuff out of the quantum field, pulling stuff out of the Akashic, like there's this whole other realm of things around us that most people don't have access to. We're stuck in this physical, but there's much more than the physical once you open up to it. And a lot of people can't believe it until you see it or experience it.
Yeah.
But the old school Wi-Fi almost
it's
like...
It's so accessible. And there's so many ways to access it, you know. I'm inspired by the Aboriginal people of Australia, and they did walkabouts. And they would leave the tribe and they would walk for 10 days or more on a solo journey to reconnect to the dream time and to the earth and all of its wisdom. And they'd have profound, you know, epiphanies, and they would get the information that they need. They would get the answers that they seek, that they can better serve the tribe and maybe even forecast, you know, what's to come and to help the tribe. And I once did one walkabout. It wasn't a traditional like vision quest or anything like that, but it was a 5-month pilgrimage from the top of New Zealand to the bottom of New Zealand. And this is the happiest of my life, my happiest time in my life, because I had just the backpack and I had just the land under my feet. And it was I did most of it barefoot, and I raised lots of money for animal sanctuaries and lots of my beautiful causes that I believed in at the time, but
yeah.
that 5 months was something that was so simple but so rewarding. Just the fact of walking, like our ancestors walked and migrated across the massive land masses from Africa, and we migrated by foot a lot in the past, and I felt like I was reconnecting to that. I was reconnecting to the earth. A lot of my questions, you know, my father was ill at the time, a lot of these questions were answered, and I went and saw my father before. I had a month with him before I left, and he passed when I left. So,
sorry to hear.
You know, it's kind of like it steered you. Remember that owl story, actually, when you went and saw your grandfather? Remember that story you shared?
I could share it on the podcast.
Please share it. I love this. Okay. It inspired me.
So this is my owl story, everyone. This is during, I was planting trees, and I was helping my friend's reservation, like First Nation Reserve in Canada, with their tree planting contract. My good friend Alexander Hardy asked if I can come give him a hand. I said, sure. And I went there, and like his family treated me better than my own parents do. Nothing against my parents, but they fed me, they made my laundry, made my bed every day. They treated me like one of their own, and I'm forever grateful to Alex's parents. You know, they were awesome. But anyway, the day off, we went with the elders, and we were calling in the moose. They do hunting, fishing, and trapping, but they're calling, doing moose calls to bring moose into the area. And the younger guys were like, you know, come with us, Dill. We're going to go for a walk. We're going to check out this area. You should come with us. So I said, sure. And we went, we're walking, and out of nowhere, this big bird flies in front of us, goes into a tree, and it's an owl, like a big owl, and it's looking dead at us. And I was like, oh, ever cool, what's this? And all my friends were shocked, and they were like frozen. I said to them, I said, what's wrong? What's going on? They're like, to us, Dill, in our teachings, this is the messenger of death. When the owl comes and presents itself to you like in this way, it means a close family member is going to die. And it was a few days after that, uncle, close relative, died in their family. So after, like, it was a year or two after that, I'm driving, I'm staying in this community by Thunder Bay in Ontario, and I'm driving my van, I guess Lappy area, and I'm driving up there, like, snowy bush road, and what do I see? It's a big bird, big owl flies in front of my van, flies into the tree. And I pull over and I look at him. He's looking at me, and I was like, "Oh shit!
Oh no!"
And the first thought that went to my mind was, "Grandpa, Grandpa is, you know, in his 80s now, and he was older, and I have not seen him in like 2-3 months because this is during COVID time, and he was very paranoid. So, I didn't go. I haven't seen him in a while, and I thought, you know, I have to go see Grandpa. This is going to be my last chance to see him and connect with him." So I go see Grandpa, and I basically just tell him how much I love him, and that I'm happy to see him. And I had asked him, I said, "Grandpa, if you have any, like, any advice or any wisdom you could share with me, greatest advice you could give to me, what would it be? What is it?" And he's like, "You know, Dill, be honest, be a genuine, real, authentic person. People appreciate it, people see it, people sense it, and people highly respect when you're honest. Even if it makes you look bad, they appreciate and respect you more when you are straight honest." I said, "Thank you, Grandpa, and I will be as genuine as I can be with people." Wow. And you know what, man, it was only a few days later and my grandpa died.
Whoa.
Fucking died. I was like,
"Oh, the owl was spot on, hey?
Dude.
Messenger."
That's my owl story. But you know, I'm so messenger. Grateful that I got that message, that I got that heads up to go see him.
Yeah,
because I wouldn't have gotten my goodbye, you know. But I did. I got my goodbye, and I was able to see him, and he died in that week, man. Like,
and it's so important to have those goodbyes, because once they're gone, it's you know, it's just an intention you send to them.
Yeah,
spirit. But you know, like, when I hugged my father last, you know, like, I felt like he knew deep, like deep in him, he knew that he was going to pass when I took off to South America. Mm. But it was just a matter of time, because he had lost his legs in his last year, and he was kind of withering. You know, he had a life, you know, drinking quite ample amount of red wine and wining and dining steak dinners a lot, you know, and it caught up with him in his 70s, you know, as it does. And he went in a quite, I heard he went quite in a lot of suffering, you know, his heart went out. And but that last hug, man, with my father, I felt the shake. It was like a shake. It was a shake to it, you know, like a kind of like a inner tremble was manifesting in both of us. And that was the last moment our hearts were that close. But now I feel him every time I tune in to him, especially working with the plant medicines, because I think they are doorways to speak with our ancestors, especially working with the Wachuma, the cactus.
Yeah.
It's his heart and grandfather. So I really feel his presence then, and my dad gave me a lot of love, and I was very lucky to have him as a guide for 31 years. But yeah, it's sad to let go of his form, though. You know, there's always this grieving that, you know, his form's not here. We can't turn to him for tangible physical advice, you know, in person, because you always got your dad's voice in your head from day one, right? So.
But you got to be grateful for all that time you had got to spend with him.
Yeah.
I was lucky enough to, you know, my first grandpa passed when I was 18.
Whoa.
He watched me turn into a young adult, a young man.
Mm.
And my other grandpa, I think I was 27 when he passed. So I was lucky enough to spend all that time with my grandparents. And in my I still see them, like in my dream time, in the astral, like I still see them. Mm. They still come. And the one grandpa, he's always joyous. And the last time I saw Rudolph Gallant, my mom's dad, we shared a meal together. I made him a nutritious meal, and we shared a smile and a laugh, and that was fucking beautiful.
Yeah.
My other grandpa, when I last saw him, he's not as happy as a guy. it was still good to see him.
Yeah.
And I remember hugging him. Yeah. It was good to be with him again.
That's beautiful, man.
Yeah.
I believe that there's this heart network. You know, I had a really strong DMT experience quite a few years back now, like 6 years ago, but it sat with me this whole time. And that once hearts connect, it doesn't matter if it's close or short or like distance wise, but once hearts connect, it's this network that's fully connected, and each heartbeat is connected to it. And I had this beautiful visualization, even the insects. Hearts beating, that they're even connected to us, and that it's received. And like once the heart network is growing and expanding in this crazy network of hearts, that it's always connected, it can't be disconnected. And you know, all our loved ones that have passed, we're kind of feeding them through the heart threads, you know. And that we're sending them love, and that it's important to send love to your ancestors. Go, oh, grandpa or father, I still love you. I can still feel you, you know, and just acknowledging them and sending it, like they're still in existence, just not in this physical reality here right now in front of us. Maybe they're in a different form, or I don't know, whatever your beliefs are, it doesn't matter. But it's, know that there's this tangible heart thread network, and that we are always tapped into it. And when our hearts are open, we're like, you know, it's like electricity flowing in and out.
Yeah.
You know, keeping our vitality. And then when we're closed off and off, we've only got like a tiny little drip of charge coming in, you know. That's kind of how I visualize it, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're talking about like close past ones dying and being able to communicate with them beforehand. When I was in Tasmania, this is... just after the ayahuasca San Pedro ceremony, I was hanging out with the medicine lady, and she was telling me about her father and their relationship. And their relationship wasn't all that great or tight. But in her dream time, her father came. He was kind of sick, and they still thought he was going to last another half a year or so many months. But he came to her in her dream time, the medicine lady, and... basically just said, I love you, and I'm sorry that we've been fighting and having these issues, but I want you to know I'm gonna be passing away on Monday. I will be dying on Monday. And I just wanted to let you know that I love you, and I'm sorry for what happened. And
making amends.
So she woke up and she just started crying. She called her friend. She's like, my dad's going to be dying on Monday. Oh, like, he told me, and she never did call him. Because in her dream, they had their goodbye or whatever.
All right.
And he was, like, kind of ill. But come Monday, he died, man. Whoa. He died on Monday. Like, she was told in her dream. And, he passed on that. Weird, eh?
It's trippy. Just amazing that he said goodbye in the dream realm rather than the waking world, because maybe his body wasn't fit enough to say proper goodbye.
And it was like, she described it as, that was his full self, his spiritual self. Like,
yeah,
it
his high self, yeah.
Like, so full of love.
Yeah.
And compassion. And so, like, it was more of himself than just the physical.
Which was quite, probably suffering and quite weighted, you know? Hard to express that pure emotion.
Yeah, but she did have a beautiful goodbye.
That's so beautiful, man.
Yeah.
Wow, thanks for sharing that story. I haven't heard
it
that.
It just reminded me of, kind of like what we were talking about. It reminded
me
of that.
So much we don't understand, you know, like it's such a mystery, this world.
And I find, you know, I come from a place where I know nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But you're more receptive to having everything come in.
Yeah.
Where when you come from the mindset of, oh, I know everything. I know this. I know that. Yeah. You're closed off.
Yeah.
You're closed off to
the
flow.
I already know.
The
know-it-all, you know.
Yeah.
Knowledge can be a bit of a limitation sometimes.
Yeah.
It's also power. Knowledge is power.
Yeah.
But wisdom is a different thing. You know, it's more of experiential, you know.
Yeah.
You know.
But yeah, when you're open to it, you can let the free flow of this whole world come through you, and you can really speak through your heart. But yeah, when you think you know everything, you close yourself off, man.
I
feel
like
the magic.
Some of the most wisest people I've met are so childlike in nature. They're so open to receive, and they're giddy. They're so giddy, and they really instantly dissolve the ego in the room, and you just feel free to express yourself however you feel. You don't feel like, you know, it's just like when you're around a child, you don't feel like self-conscious, you know. It's only when you're around, you know, proper adults with degrees or professionals and know everything that you feel like, fuck, I don't know if I should share right now, you know. Like,
you're real careful with what I share.
I'm gonna get into an intellectual debate here, you know, and you've got your guard up, you know. And I don't like walking through life with my guard up. I feel like you're in kind of war mode rather than peace mode, and that we do fluctuate between the two depending how safe we feel.
Mm.
I love those spaces where you feel safe and you can be who you are, and people accept you as you are, and it's not taken too seriously, you know, because everyone can get
taken with a grain of salt, you know. It's nice when you can speak freely. Openly and not when you don't have to put that shield up, that guard up, and it's nice, it's more comfortable, and you get way more out of the conversation and the experience that way. And everyone's just trying to look cool and impress others. It's not real. It feels really fake, and it's not as fun.
Yeah, it's like that. There's a window, you know, when people show you basically what you want to see. And then it only takes a matter of a few days or a week for some people for the shell to break. And then you see their true colors, their true expression come out. And, it's not a nice way to communicate when you're just showing them what they want to see. You know, it's a people pleaser in us. He just wants to be loved and accepted and all that, which is beautiful. But we should be loved and accepted for who we are.
Yeah.
You know? Like, not for what we could be or if we had refinement or... You know, or so and so. Or if it were more like, you know, people look for the mirror. You know, when I look at you, Dylan, I see a beautiful mirror in myself, you know. Someone who's of the earth and who's connected to the elements and someone who's real, who's fucking real and says it how it is, you know. And it's refreshing. Instead of just telling me what I want to hear, you say what is real, you know. Even sometimes it's not easy to say. You kind of like, brace yourself, River. You know, like, you know, I have a few questions, you know, like, you know, I'm like, go on, bud, you know, it's all good. Because it's a greater brotherhood, a deeper love that, you know, it's a nice reflection.
Yeah.
You know.
I hear you. I remember when I first met you, this is when we were stuck in the town, when all these rainbows were trying to get to the gathering. We had to travel the whole country in Nepal, go to the other side.
40 hours on a bus, one big messy bedroom.
And we were stuck in this little town for like...
5 days, man.
5 days.
Police stopped us because of our... The safety in the national park was not secure or something like that.
Yeah, we had to get the federal government approval to go through.
To let us into this national park, which was definitely their God's country. It was beautiful.
Oh, it was
waterfalls pouring out of mountains, big meadows, lakes.
It was
Yeah, we were sitting on the side of the road. I'm pretty sure you were sitting on the side of the road. You know, I think you were quite quiet.
Mm.
And conversation stirred from somewhere. I think it was just because we were passing time, like refugees on the side of the road with our bus and all our bags, just like kind of like, what do we do now? Should we get some momos? Like, into a language circle. I'm pretty sure we went for a walk and together and scouted out our potential camping site, and then there was someone doing a language circle where everyone shares a different. A thank you in every language, and then hello in every language, and it just go around the circle and learning each other's languages. It was cool.
It was. But like, I had this feeling, I'm like, I met this guy before, I feel like I know him, and I kept thinking, I couldn't figure it out. And then we got to the gathering itself, and I remember I came up to you and I was like, you know, River, I feel like I've known you for a long time, but we never met before, have we? And you're like, no, not before that town. And I'm like, it feels like I've known you for hundreds of years, or like I've known you before, and I can't quite remember how or where, but...
I'm like, this has all been done before. Who knows the past life connections, or it's just so mysterious, you know. Some people are really familiar, and we definitely... I felt like that connection too. It's all in intense familiarity and comfort, and just like, oh... We can just be at ease, you know, skip the pleasantries. We're all good.
You mentioned at the gathering, like, yeah, if you ever come to New Zealand, you should stop by our eco community or whatever, come hang out, spend some time. I was like, yeah, that'd be cool. I think you guys took off, and I was like, I didn't get their contact. But then my friend Tommy was there. I was like, did you get their contact? I was like, yeah, I just saw them just before they left, man. I got lucky and I got their WhatsApp number.
Well, you didn't get mine because I don't have a phone and haven't had one for a while, but you got my partner's one.
Yeah.
Tommy got my partner's one, and she's quite connected on there. And then you just appeared. You appeared on the land one day here in Mudaho, and it was like, wow. It's like, Dylan, you're here. We spoke of this like last month. No, you're like, it's quite a few months ago, but yeah. But like, time is so bizarre in that sense, eh? It's just like, and then we worked on the land together, which was really cool.
Digging this giant,
we dug a hobbit hole, like tunneling into the earth, just, you know, strong earth connection on that one. We pickaxes and we got quite deep in there, and it was a really, really cool moment where it was a stormy night, and Janelle's like, you can't light a fire outside, it's too windy, you start a bushfire. And I'm like, I know where we can have a fire. So we went into the cave that is the hobbit hole, and we just had a little tiny fire at the mouth of the cave, and it just lit up the whole cave.
Oh, it got warm in there too. The natural earth insulated, right?
Yeah, it's so insulated. Yeah, and it was just a little and it was stormy as outside, but inside the cave it was calm and still and warm.
And I like how the voice, the sounds travel in that.
The vibration.
It just sounds so awesome. Like, it'd be a cool place to record music.
Or a podcast.
Or a podcast.
We should have done it in the cave.
Yeah, but who's...
The echo, you know.
Maybe it would sound weird on the mic. Maybe it'd sound awesome. I'd be scared of little bits of dust falling onto the laptop and stuff.
You should record a song in there.
I should.
You know, because it is kind of like a natural... like studio, you know, sound, because the sound is bouncing off perfectly geometrically, especially because it's kind of round in there. I like to play my handpan in there, but I haven't done it yet. I need to take the handpan in there.
I went in there the other day and I was like, whoa, we actually went pretty deep in this. Like,
yeah. And then I was like, oh, I think we're gonna sell the share, so we should probably stop digging. The land wants me to leave now. We've dug too far into Pachamama and it's hurting her skin.
Man, that could have been my home. I would have lived in that
I old. Know. That was... I could just see you popping out with your hat like, oh, hey. Oh good morning, top of the morning to you.
Well, would you like some root tea?
It's, this is like a fridge in here. It's a steady temperature. I think actually when I pass this share on, I might rename it the Hobbit Hole, the Bush Fridge, because it's actually such a stable temperature inside the earth. Great for growing mushrooms, great for keeping kumara, potatoes, or fruits and vegetables.
Like a root cellar, yeah.
Good temperature.
Yeah.
For a wine enthusiast, they keep their wine in there, or, you know. I don't know. Like, I think it's pretty smart to have a underground cellar.
Yeah, the olden days, they'd have these root cellars, and they would store their goods in there, and it'd last a fairly long time.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't tell you about the island out here, just off the coast here. It's 3 degrees cooler on the island, and apparently the local iwi, the tribes in the area, would row out, and they'd dig a hole in the center of the island, in the sand, and put their potatoes in there, and store them, and it was called a kumara fridge. And that's where they stored it to last the whole winter. So they would take their massive harvest out there and bury it on the island where it was 3 degrees cooler in the sand so the potatoes wouldn't rot. And it was their little island fridge. It's such a cool thing, you know. A lot of energy to row a waka, a canoe out there. But the iwi really utilised that temperature change because I noticed it was quite really cool on the island. Took a little boat out there about 2 months ago. I want to take you out on the boat too.
I'd love that.
With an electric outboard motor.
I haven't been out in the ocean too many times, so that'd be pretty cool.
You're an earth dweller, eh? So you might be. I think you'll be all right.
I love the ocean too, though. Every time I go there, I'm so happy. I'm so full of freaking life and love and positivity. Like, I don't know what happens when I go to the ocean, but I'm just overfilled with positive energy, man. Like,
well, we'll be going at crack of dawn, my brother. Like 5 a.m. is when it's the stillest, you know, glassiest water and the most favorable time to head out, because it does take us about half an hour with this little electric motor to just putt across there. But beautiful white sandy beach, seals just frolicking. I think there's two male seals on the island that are like territorial. So you don't want to get too close to them, they'll bite your ass. Wow, this has been nice chat, man.
Yeah, are there any words of advice or final words you'd like to share with the world?
I would just say reconnect to the nature and live simply, and you'll be astonished how uncomplicated your life becomes. And to be healthy, health wealth, man. It's one of the most important things that I've come across and that I'm trying to live. And yeah, then we can create a new world, a better world, and it starts here. So just go gently, be well, love yourself, love others, and reconnect to your place in nature and as nature.
Thanks.
Thanks for having me, brother.
Thanks for being a part of this beautiful podcast and this time. I can't thank you enough. And thank you for the listeners for taking their time to listen to this. And I hope everyone has an amazing day. Much love.
Aloha.